I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching the game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me in studio, Dave Goss. Los dos. Just the two of us, Dave. Simon Borg, nowhere to be found. He's
out in Flushing at the U.S. Open.
Is he?
He's lounging with a honey deuce in the corner of Louis Armstrong Stadium watching a bit of doubles.
What's a honey deuce?
They make this drink there where it's two balls of honeydew, melon, because it looks like a tennis ball. And they call it the honey deuce, you know, like advantage deuce.
He's not actually out there. I can see him through this window pane here. He's working. We're going to handle our business here. We got a huge show for you today, a lot to talk about. We'll start with the armchair analyst, Matt Doyle. Jurgen Klinsmann has made some comments here ahead of this Peru friendly that feel like spin to me, and we're going to see what Matt thinks about them as well. We'll also talk to Quincy Ameriqua of the San Jose Earthquakes. They're in action this weekend. Just one of 10 teams that international break, some buys for half the league. That's changed the way things will set up from the league perspective this weekend. And then we had the opportunity to talk to Kyle Martino, or I should say I had the opportunity. Dave was off, I don't know, you were maybe some double deuces or honey deuces or whatever those things are. Anyway, he dropped by the MLS studios on Wednesday. We have a wide-ranging conversation with the now the Travel Channel host. He does EPL. He still watches MLS. He's got a great life. We're going to talk to him about it. But you know what? Let's get into these comments from Jurgen Klinsmann, because this is the stuff that gets people's blood boiling. In a sit-down with Washington Post reporter Steve Goff, Jurgen had a lot to say. He said, "I am having fun being measured by every game and judged by every game." Speaking of the hot seat that he's currently in, he even admitted that it is. He says, "It's heating up, and I think that's pretty cool. The players will feel the heat." I have a feeling that these comments rubbed Matt the wrong way. Let's bring on now Doyle. What's up, man?
Oh, just doing some really fun reading today, guys. You know how it is.
Yeah, I do know how it is. I kind of dropped in some of his comments, him being Jurgen Klinsmann, before we brought you on. But here's the one that you have written about on the site today, MLSsoccer.com, your Thursday Q&A. It's basically him talking about, I believe, that Jamaica game. It's a little bit confusing, but he says that it's a good thing that people have comments and opinions. People care. They care about the game. Then he says, do they really understand what happened at the Gold Cup? Some do, some don't. And then he puts the loss against Jamaica on officiating and set pieces. But maybe I'm wrong. Set pieces are part of the game. That's a part you have to get right, no?
Yeah, that is a part that you have to get right. And it's a part that we traditionally have gotten right. I mean, it's kind of a joke, shibboleth for U.S. national team fans. You say counterattacks and set pieces, and here there we were getting bounced out of the Gold Cup by a Jamaica team that got those little things right. And it's part of Klinsmann's MO. When something goes wrong, it is somebody else's fault. There's always a scapegoat. He's thrown the players under the bus. He's thrown, he's obviously blamed officials. He's blamed youth development. He's blamed MLS. He has blamed just about everybody but the guy in the mirror. Good reading.
So he talks about it here. He says, the hot seat is heating up. But then, once again, he says, I think the players, this is something that they need to be prepared for. I'm having fun with this. Is his seat actually hot? Should it be hot?
It should be hot. I don't know if it actually is, because Sunil was pretty unambiguous after the Gold Cup, saying that even if we lose to Mexico, Klinsmann won't be out. And to me, that's garbage. if the program is regressing under you, then you're not the right guy for the job. And this isn't about one game versus Mexico. This is about a worst ever performance in the Gold Cup, or not worst this millennium performance in the Gold Cup, about using friendlies incorrectly, and about not making progress on the overall project, which is to make us, I think, a more skillful, creative, attacking team. He hasn't done that. We have we have skillful, creative attacking players, and we see them doing pretty well in MLS and in Liga MX. And these aren't the guys who are getting put in position to succeed. So I think if you take it as a big picture, his seat should be warm, but I have my doubts as to whether or not it is.
So Mexico, he's putting all of his eggs into that basket. He said as much. These two friendlies will exclusively be a time to prepare. But I look at this roster, and my first question when it came out, because it seemed like he had moved on past a lot of guys, was what were we doing for the last year? Because a lot of the things that were tried didn't work out, or they were tried so briefly, or they were never tried. There was this idea of a transitional phase. But when I look at the past year and I look at what the future is and how that past year builds into it, I don't see that many things that apply. And it almost feels like not a waste, but completely underutilized. Am I off there? Is that just a gut reaction based on these quotes and what happened in the Gold Cup?
No, I think you and I see it the same way. I can deal with bad results if it's a good process. If we're saying, okay, you know what, we have our two veteran central midfielders that we know we're going to build around. Let's replace one of them with a kid and see how the kid does and see if they can create some chemistry, because maybe we need a backup. Maybe in 18 months, you know, the clock is ticking. And that wasn't the type of experimentation that Klinsmann gave us. He gave us Mix Diskerud at defensive midfielder. And then he gave us Alejandro Bedoya at defensive midfielder. And then he talked about Ventura Alvarado at defensive midfielder. He's inscrutable, and he's not accountable. And I obviously that frustrates me just in and of himself, but it's frustrating on a bigger level for U.S. soccer in general. This is the ball has to be in Sunil's court on some level here. And I'm not sure he really is. He's just refusing to pick it up, I guess.
Now, outside of – you have this playoff with Mexico, and it's for an opportunity to go to Confederations Cup, which the U.S. hasn't always been in. They got out of the group stage when not being in Confederations Cup at the 2014 World Cup. Me and Andrew looked at qualifying. They're going to breeze through this first round of qualifying. So going into
or at least
that,
the expectation.
The expectation is, and I will happily eat those words if they do not, because that's a mistake all on its own.
I don't think you shouldn't be happy about that, eating those words,
well,
but continue.
I think me and you could coach through that. But at what point will this buck come to stop? Is it just this Confederations? If he wins this playoff and then they do what they do in World Cup qualifying going into the Hex, at that point he's entrenched as the 2018 World Cup coach.
Yeah, I mean, this is... Yeah, I think he's entrenched regardless. Unless they do lose the first two games of the next playoff round. I mean, I think we have at least 24 more months of Jurgen Klinsmann. And it's just a matter of him trying to create a process that he can get right. It hasn't happened. And honestly, anybody who says that the U.S. has made progress under Klinsmann is selling you something, because this is a team that had made the Confederations Cup semifinals, including beating Germany under Bruce Arena in 99, and then made it to the World Cup quarterfinals in 2002. This is a team that beat Spain and made the Confederations Cup final under Bob Bradley in 2009, and then won the group in 2010. Under Klinsmann, we had an acceptable result at the World Cup, but other than that, it's been clawing and scraping and not much forward progress to speak of.
Now, me and Andrew were going to come in here because we had a little bit of an argument on Monday, which we didn't have a chance to talk about on the show. And the thing that I was noticing is I think a lot of people, when Jurgen came in, were rejecting before he got there the idea of, oh, I'm going to change everything. I'm going to try all these new tactics, or I'm going to try all these new experiments. My issue has been that if that's what he was going to say, then go out and fully do it. And I don't think he's gone far enough. I don't think he's taken enough risks or enough chances. I think he's been a little bit too conservative at times, or too, you know, if he says he's going to be different than everyone else, then be a little bit different. Is your issue that it's the process hasn't been fluent, or he's not saying what he's doing, he's not taking the risk. How do you feel?
I think he's taking the wrong kind of risks. I think when he takes a skillful player, well, Will Trapp is a good example. Will Trapp is a skillful player, a very good attacking player for a defensive midfielder. And Klinsmann's risk is to play him at left midfield in a more attacking position where Trapp's skills, A, are underused or used improperly, and B, he is not a particularly skillful player for a left midfielder. So I think the things he's attempted have almost all revolved around this really ultra defensive version of the game, and it's not. Look, it's not what we signed up for. It's what we signed up for was more attacking, more creativity, more flair, and what we've gotten is a lot of comments about fitness and a lot of guys played out of position. And a lot of ugly soccer, to be completely honest. Just a lot of really, really ugly soccer.
So one of those promises, Matt, was that the U.S. could go toe-to-toe with the best teams in the world. And frankly, they're going to get an opportunity to do that here in this next month or so. Yeah, there are two friendlies here, Peru and Brazil, but two of the best teams in CONMEBOL. And then, of course, you have Mexico in a massive match in front of 90,000 people. Let's talk about Peru really quickly. Just a reminder for folks, that game is on Friday. You can watch it on Fox Sports 1, Unimas, and UDN at 7 p.m. Eastern. What do we need to see in this game? Because now it's all prep for Mexico. The pieces have to start to come together. What do you use these 90 minutes for?
I think partnerships, really. Partnerships up top, partnerships in central midfield, and partnerships in central defense. Maybe we saw the start of that in the Gold Cup with Alvarado and Brooks. It wasn't all that promising, but that's the way it goes with young players. Up top, I'm not sure how many forwards we'll use. I'm not sure if Jozy Altidore is still the number one option. I'm not sure where Bobby Wood fits in. So I think we need to see somebody stake a claim or some pair stake a claim. And of course, central midfield is very interesting too because Jermaine Jones is back, and he basically hasn't played this year. There are just so many questions, and these were questions that I think we knew. I think this goes back to some of the frustration. We knew that these questions were coming up for the U.S. national team, and Klinsmann didn't put into place the process to answer them after last year's World Cup. And now he's paying the price, and all of us who wanted to see a Gold Cup win pay the price as well.
There you have it. Two big friendlies for the U.S. national team over the course of the next couple days. And then, of course, that October 10th Confederations. No, I did it again. CONCACAF Cup. That's going to take some time to break for me. Matt, the Armchair Analyst Doyle, thank you so much, man, for lending your opinion here. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, always a pleasure, guys.
Thanks so much, Matt. You can watch that game, as I said, 7 p.m. Friday, Fox Sports 1, Unimas, UDN, United States, and Peru at RFK Stadium. We've got Quincy Ameriquois coming up in just a second. Some big games this weekend. We won't go over all of them. Two names we did not mention in that U.S. national team discussion, Clint Dempsey, Michael Bradley. They are scheduled to hit the field for their MLS sides, the Sounders and Toronto FC, on Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, TSN2. The one national TV game this weekend, Columbus-Dallas, Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, Fox Sports 1, Fox Deportes, also airing right here, SiriusXM FC Channel 85. You can catch two other games on that, Seattle-Toronto FC on Saturday, as well as New England-Orlando on Saturday at 7:30, also right here on SiriusXM Channel 85. Let's go to Quincy Ameriquois of San Jose. They got a big game against Philadelphia on Saturday. Quincy, how's it going, man?
It's going good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's start here. I went out on a limb today on our starting lineup fantasy video, and I said you were my pick at forward this week. Are you going to prove me wrong? How am I going to be feeling on Monday?
I mean, I don't know how I feel about you saying you're going out on a limb.
Oh, yeah. I would call me out on that as well. That's true.
Yeah, I think it's a solid grab, and I think the guys are ready to come in and put in a good performance, and hopefully I can come away with the goal and keep the form going.
So I know in the past you've done some fantasy work with us. You were a big player. Are you still playing this, or is this something that you let go over the course of time?
Yeah, I kind of – this year I kind of took a back seat because, I mean, as you guys know, it's a pretty heavy time commitment, especially with how long the season is and in and out of rosters and stuff like that. So things were a little bit hectic over in Chicago. I didn't really know what was going on, so I kind of – phase it out this year. Maybe I bring it back next year.
Quincy, if you can, could you just reflect maybe a little bit on what happened in Chicago and your experience there, that what led you to San Jose eventually?
I think 2014 was a real good year for me. I showed that I could play. I could be a starter in the league for the entirety of the season and contribute. And I think just from Chicago standpoint, we didn't make playoffs, so they felt the need to get some big name players and spend money in the attacking side of things. And when you're not a big paid player, you kind of take a back seat to that. So I think when that happened, other teams started to inquire about getting me on trade. And eventually they came to a deal with San Jose and I ended up here. And, you know, I'm happy with where I'm at because obviously I'm from the area and I played here in the past.
So how does that process work from a player's perspective? You're in a market and you're not getting the opportunities you'd like to get, and the club is maybe thinking, well, we've got this good player that's not playing too much. He's got value outside of our team. How does that kind of, you know, the trade process work? Are you hearing updates from them? Do you get to make any decisions as far as where you want to go? How's it work from the player's side?
From the player's side, you're kind of at the mercy of the club. You'll end up going wherever they send you. If they decide to send you or trade you, you don't really have a say in that side of things. So you kind of just hope for the best. I think when you're traded in this league, it kind of puts that mark on you in terms of you have value in the eyes of the league. So when clubs are thinking of potential trades or potential moves, your name probably gets tossed around a lot. So I think as a player, you're just prepared for it, especially with how loose the league can be with trading players and kind of the rules and stuff with movement, player movement. So being in the league as long as I've been in the league, you kind of understand or know when maybe a move's coming or that the potential for that to happen could be there, but you don't know where you'll end up or if it'll even happen.
So as you said, you head back to your home state, to your home area. You immediately jump into the starting lineup. 9 starts in a row, I believe, for Dom Kinnear and the Quakes. You've got 4 goals and 3 assists, which I knew, and now I feel pretty bad about saying the go out on the limb thing. But what's working, man? Why is this a situation that you were able to walk into and find immediate success?
I think that's just kind of been my game over the course of my career. Being told that, okay, you get your opportunity, so you better take advantage of it, otherwise we'll move on to someone else. So I think I've been kind of prepped for that over the course of my career, and when Dom brought me in, he told me he's bringing me in to play minutes and not be a roster-filled player. So having that peace of mind and understanding of what I was brought here to do allowed me to play my game and understand that I'm going to get some consistent time. And I know if I get consistent time, I can perform and get points and help the team win. So that's kind of all you need. I don't think too much has changed other than just continuing to get consistent minutes similar to 2014.
When you find out that you're going back to California, that you're going back, you know, to your home area, how excited were you that it ended up that way?
Yeah, I mean, there's, 22 other places you could end up. So to hear you going back to somewhere familiar, back in my home state, and I could be closer to family and friends was a pleasant surprise, considering I've kind of been all over the country and even in Canada. So it's a breath of fresh air.
And then on top of that, as a striker, you now get to go work with Chris Wondolowski, who's a guy I'm assuming a lot of American strikers really look up to. What have you been able to take from him so far?
Yeah, he's a clinical finisher, so, and he has been his whole career. And I was here back in 2009 when he was over here too. So it's kind of it's nice to see. I remember where he's at then and where he's gotten to now. So it's kind of a motivation to keep doing what I'm doing and do the right things like I have been, and I'll find success.
Never know when that explosion is going to come. We've seen a lot of offensive explosions from the Galaxy in recent weeks. Didn't happen in the California Classico. They come to Avaya Stadium. You guys walk out of there with a big result. There's been a lot of people that, as LA have added all these big names, as they've kind of racked up a few blowouts against different teams, have kind of started to say, oh, man, this team might be unstoppable. And then you guys put a stop to that. When you look at the Galaxy, when you see kind of the hype train get going as a team, as their rivals, what goes through your mind?
It's just like any other team in the league. On any given day, the bottom team in the league can beat the top team in the league. I think that's what's interesting about MLS. It's very even from that standpoint. And though they have a lot of big-name players, I think sometimes people underestimate how good domestic talent is as well, too, you know, and the willingness to put in the hard work and to do the things necessary to kind of thwart the offensive arsenal that LA does have, you know. And if you can do that and frustrate them for long enough, they're definitely beatable, and we were able to show that in our last match.
And this San Jose, now you guys, you've won all these games straight, and a lot of people starting to watch you maybe for the first time this season and trying to explain what's going on. Is there anyone since you've come in that maybe you hadn't played with before or you hadn't watched as closely that's really impressed you or surprised you in San Jose?
I'd say Godoy. He's a big add to our team, just in terms of like the experience and the calming presence in the midfield. Like he'll get stuck in on tackles when he needs to, but when there's times where we're high pressing, we're causing the opposing team to kick the ball away. When Clarence and Victor are winning the headers, he's there to pick up the second ball and then kind of calm us down and maintain possession and complete his passes. So I think by him doing that, it really allows Wando and me and the other guys to commit more to an offensive role, as opposed to kind of sitting back farther and farther defensively as the other team maintains more possession.
No Anibal Godoy this weekend. He's on international duty. But Quincy Ameriquois and the rest of the Quakes will take on the Philadelphia Union on Saturday, 10:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Live, if you want to watch that one from out of the local networks. Quincy, thanks for joining us, man. Good luck. I might have to put the C on you this weekend. You got the confidence flowing in me, man.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
Big thanks to Quincy. Big thanks to Matt Doyle for joining us here. All your thoughts, we want them. I know there's some folks out there that are going to have strong feelings about Jurgen Klinsmann and the U.S. right now. At Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, Kyle Martino.
Hey guys, this is Justin Ram with the Columbus Crew, also with the Iraq National Team, and you guys are listening to Extra Time Radio.
Very happy to have the man, the myth, the legend. I'm just talking about your hair, Kyle, here in the Extra Time Radio studios. The co-host now of 36 Hours on the Travel Channel. Of course, you know him from all that English Premier League coverage on NBC Sports. Kyle, thanks for joining us, man.
It's to live with my hair. It's like I'm Ringo Starr, and my hair is John Lennon. I feel like I just get dead. No yeah. respect.
I debated whether to bring you on like that, and I just kind of went with it.
No, you
the
debated
time.
Whether to bring me on at all. You thought you were just going to bring my hair and sit in here.
Yeah,
so
that's
much
true.
More interesting
yeah,
than
yeah. The conversation would have been a little bit drier. But what are you going to do? I mean, but tell me your secret, man. I mentioned it. The Travel Channel. Now you went from soccer star to burgeoning media personality here. What's going on?
Well, ever since. When I first retired, it was really tough to watch your career end. You know, as a professional athlete, it's kind of a Peter Pan complex where yeah. you imagine you're going to be a professional athlete forever. And this thing that I wanted more than anything else in my life, I got. And then with some bad injuries, it started slipping through my fingers. And the thing that was slipping through my fingers the most was the love of playing, the love of doing what I had always wanted to do. So when I had that last bad injury and saw the writing on the wall, and at 28 did what I thought I would be doing at 38, which right. is say goodbye to my first and biggest love, I didn't want anything to do with soccer. So I immediately went and worked in finance, which was so bizarre.
Did you go cold turkey? Or are you like, you're not watching?
I went total cold turkey. I had the shakes. It was awkward.
DT soccer shakes? Yeah,
exactly. And right at the financial crisis, which I'm not responsible for, I started working in finance, which was a big eye-opener that soccer
was
actually a lot easier. But no, I found my way back and in love with it, but also still have this appetite for just doing other things. And I think that as a soccer player, I always had idols and always had people that I wanted to emulate. And I think Strahan's the guy. Like, he's pulled off what I'd love to be able to do, which is be the jock on the weekends and talk about the game that you love so dearly. And then during the week, meet interesting people, travel, eat, do things that don't really fall into the sports world all that often, and be able to, you know, sort of live that dual life.
I think that well-rounded aspect is something that we're all grappling with, especially in the sports world, because the hours are just crazy and your weekends get given up. How do you, you know, how do you balance that? You got a kid at home. I'm sure jetting out to Connecticut or wherever NBC's studios are. You're going to Istanbul and wherever else 36 hours takes you.
It's tough. A full disclosure: before we went on, you looked at me and you said, "No offense, you look like crap."
Yeah. Well, That's tired is what I said, but yeah, that's the translation.
We're good enough friends where I can take the honesty. It's tough. Like anything else, you know, it's the price of when sometimes you get what you want. It comes at a price. It comes at being on the road a lot away from my family, which is definitely tough. But you know, my team, our unit, like me and my wife, she is so incredibly supportive of me going away and doing something that I love, doing something that she'd love to do, but also doing something that hopefully opens up opportunities for our family down the road. But as far as how I got into it, it's just kind of lucky. Just got put up for something. Like, I've been put up for millions of things that I got turned down on, and this one just hit. And my wife and I said, you know, our kid's young. This is the time where we can really hustle. So let's hustle for a few years and then, you know, maybe sit back down and renegotiate and figure out if we can continue this sort of pace that we're at right now.
So you mentioned the, you know, the after career decisions that a lot of players make. I mean, downstairs here for us, Jimmy Conrad's doing he's doing videos for Kick TV.
I just saw those guys.
Pierce is in the office. I'm going to make you an executive producer of a show. I know you don't have time for that right now, but
I like,
you know,
the title.
In a different world, you're the executive producer. You've got to pick one current MLS player, guy in the league right now.
Oh, wow.
He's your talent. He's the person you're putting in front of the camera. Who's got the chops to do it?
Oh, wow. Benny Failhaber. Did you ever see
Benny?
Yeah, I did.
Did
you see the Benny Failhaber show?
Of course I did.
He's already trained. I mean, he can hit the ground running. I think
Sal Zizzo next to him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Only if he can get Sal part of the deal. I mean, that's his Paul Schaefer.
Right. Right.
You know what? That's interesting. There are a lot of guys that I think could do really well. And you know, we've had Tim Howard coming in the studio with us, and I like what Jimmy's doing and MLS Digital in general, where it's becoming I don't want to say a farm team. I don't mean it in like a pejorative sense, but it's becoming a place where, with low stakes and not a bunch of big cameras on a huge network, you can learn and see if you have an appetite for it, if you're any good at it. Because I've seen these videos. Bruce Smith, the football player. Did you ever see that video of him passing out on ESPN?
I didn't. Oh, wow.
So many of these athletes from other leagues and even ours get thrown on the mothership or thrown on these big shows as
swim.
Their first thing.
Yep.
And man, what incredible pressure. And I was like that. ESPN just threw me in. And I'm sure if you go back and watch some of my first shows, I was awful. Soccer Talk Live, I was definitely an example of that. So, you know, I think that what Jimmy's doing is incredible. And I think he's got an outstanding talent for it. And I just love to see opportunities for guys after their playing days are done who want to stay involved in the game in some capacity.
I mean, you see Jesse Marsh. He was with us last year during World Cup and playoffs. And Dom Dwyer was in. Kalen Carr's doing work for us. So getting to see the personalities of a lot of guys as they come through. How much do you get to watch MLS, though?
Not as much as I'd like to, no, because, you know, it's probably a bit of insecurity and that idea of being the only American on set for the English Premier League, where I'm...
Yeah, you got to back the
I'm
front.
Studying for 1,000 multiple choice tests when every weekend it's 5 questions, you know, and I just... I really have it's consuming, just completely immersed in that league. And I think that's what fans deserve. Not to say you shouldn't be up on every league, but I want a lot of our fans that watch every game every weekend, I think that I need to be at that sort of level as well. So when I was doing several leagues, you kind of have to scratch the surface a little bit or else you're never going to see your wife or your kid. And
I feel it with just MLS. Like, how – how much time is there in the day and how much appetite do you have? How do you balance that sort of thing?
Yeah, because if you do it right and you watch all the games and you read all the articles, I mean, you're talking about a 50-hour work week while you're 3 days during that work week, you're gone and away from your family. So when I get home, I tell my wife I'm in the office, in the family room. That doesn't fly because I get handed the one-year-old and
course.
She says, you were gone all weekend. Yeah. Take this kid.
Her concept of office a little bit different, the one-year-old.
So I wish that I could watch more games than I've been watching.
Okay, so MLS now compared to when you were doing your thing for a variety of teams. You know, I know you don't get to watch as much as you'd like, but have you seen, you know, a lot of guys in the league, have you seen a shift, a noticeable shift anywhere? Maybe philosophy of how to build teams, technically, tactically, what sort of evolution are you seeing in this league?
I'm definitely seeing that younger kids the development, youth development is always going to be a problem in this country, and it's going to be a slow burn. It's going to be something that we're throwing money at, but nowhere near the amount of money that needs to be thrown at it in order to fix it. But I am seeing some of these young kids step in, like Giassi Zardes, for example. I mean, this is a guy who, if he was able to get into a developmental program earlier on, you know, he went through the college system, you know, got into the pipeline of the Galaxy, and now is starting to shine. You know, those are examples of guys, if we could have caught them a little bit earlier, he would be much more polished than he is at this point, and he's already doing great. But what I have noticed is, you know, I watched Rivalry Week, which I think is excellent, and watched, you know, Portland, Seattle, and all these games to see the buzz and the atmosphere. I mean, I remember playing at Arrowhead, and I could hear someone texting. You know
I remember
I mean?
Being at Arrowhead and being the person.
You were probably the person
texting
being this Martino. He just doesn't play any defense. Who's this Kyle Martini guy? Like 20 times.
Yeah.
The atmospheres, how they look on TV, how they feel in the stadium, are incredible. But you know, watching the Galaxy play NYCFC a few weeks ago, you know, of course Frank Lampard wasn't on the field, but that was a big event. That was a big game. Pirlo, say what you will about his age, is still an incredibly magical, gifted, and talented player who just played the Champions League final the season before. So don't give me the retirement conversation. He was never fast. I played against him. I played against him back in like 2002. He was at that same speed back then.
Right. Hasn't changed too much.
So I think how viable it is to big name players that still have aspirations to have big challenging careers, but also think about all of the players that have come to MLS internationally that are getting opportunities with their national team simply based on their performance in the league. I think that uptick is really helpful. But I also look at the fact that I was talking to Steven Gerrard before he came over. We went over to Liverpool with NBC and we were watching a practice. And I said, what have the guys said to you that you called over and you talked to your buddies Beckham? And he said, you know, a lot of them said, don't come over here and think this is going to be a walk in the park. It is absolutely not. Obviously, the conditions of travel and heat and things like that, but pace, the physicality of the league, these things that people just assume aren't as good as the Premier League, aren't as good as other major leagues. MLS is the quality per dollar is the best league in the world. I mean, value for money. The entire wage bill for MLS is the wage bill of like Stoke City. So
right, and
like,
we always say American players may be the best value in world soccer.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And you saw Jason Christ come out this weekend. He's been very frustrated for a long time. You can see it on the sidelines. You can certainly see it after games. He came out, and on the Yes Network,
David Villa's comments.
Yeah,
right?
that before that. But after the game this weekend, he called out his older players. He said there was a leadership issue there. And then he said after in the press conference, players need to decide if they want to be here. As a former player, when you hear your coach say something like that, what is the message that you take from that? How do you react? What do you...
It's tough because it can go one of two ways. Either that galvanizes the group and you see practices get better, you see accountability, you see older guys calling people out and leading by example, or you see a couple of personalities that weren't helpful start to become even more cancerous.
Yeah.
So the good part about the latter is it becomes easier to identify and then take guys like that out of the equation. I think Jason's finding it very difficult. And I don't know all the inner workings, but from the outside, it seems like maybe some of these guys weren't what he wanted to bring in. And I just referenced the success that he had at Salt Lake was built on a completely different model. So I think he's finding this dream job to be extremely challenging based on all of the cooks in the kitchen and the pressures to make big statements because you're in a big city and you got another team who's finding a lot of success right now.
At your expense sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, not sometimes.
Yeah.
The sweet,
so,
baby.
I still think Jason Kreis is a fantastic coach. I think he's a great guy. I think he's taking time to rediscover what worked for him at Salt Lake, which he went away from a little bit. And you might see a little bit of a renaissance and a return to some of the characteristics that made him and Real Salt Lake so successful. But he has to coexist with a different beast now.
Yeah, I think for me, when you look at his situation, I said Grumpy Pundits the other day on Sirius, he's the man for the job for me. I don't know that you go out and find a better coach to succeed in MLS, but you know, like a player comes in and has to adapt to a new situation, they're still certainly in that point right now. He's one of the best coaches in the league. Carl Robinson's another young guy. We're looking down the list. Young guys, young guys, young guys. A lot of guys that played in the league at the same time as you. Jim Curtin, Benny Olsen. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Who is the guy who doesn't have a job right now that you think could do a really good job with an MLS franchise? And who's the player that you think has a future in coaching that – you look at the league, you say, man, this guy are just retired, maybe hanging out. This guy's got a future.
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm trying to think of guys that I played with that, you know, what's so tough about that is Pablo Mascherini would have been an example of someone that I would have thought was going to find an incredible amount of success. And, you know, it depends on what position they're put in. I don't know if that was, even though he has all the ties back to Colorado, I don't know if that was really the right position for him to show how good he can be as a coach. So it's really difficult to predict. I would say that, you know, Todd Donovan's a guy that I think is very smart, was always really good, very communicative on the field. I feel like he'd make a great coach. I never got the sense that was something he was entirely interested
gung-ho
in.
Yeah.
But he'd be a guy I think would do a great job.
Just announced his retirement. You see the LA Galaxy, they're racking up former players in that system.
Which,
man, up and down the line in the academy, everywhere else.
If he does stay involved, it's going to have to be there.
Yeah. Great training ground for him. The LA Galaxy struggles on the road, but they blow people out of home. You mentioned that NYCFC game.
Yeah.
Incredible performance from them. I've had a conversation with the armchair analyst, Matt Doyle, a bit lately where somebody threw it at him on Twitter. This is how these things go. And they said, where do you think LA Galaxy would finish in the English Premier League? I'm going to put that one to you. You watch all the games. It's been a wide range of opinions.
It's a constant debate. We were talking about this in the studio, Robbie Earl and I, and he said that, was it Thierry Henry or maybe Robbie Keane? I shouldn't say which name because I can't remember.
Right.
But a guy who's played in the Premier League, a high-profile guy, said that he thinks the LA Galaxy would be a mid-table team in the Premier League. And the only issue, going back to what you said before, then the Galaxy maybe has it better than most, is the depth.
Yeah.
Is the depth of squad becomes so difficult and such a demanding and long season. But I, when these teams came over, like when we played Chelsea and it was their starting team, it was Drogba, you know, Shevchenko played that game and Essien and Lampard and all these guys. A lot of people say, oh, well, it's just preseason.
Yep.
These guys are 2 weeks away from game one. Are they at their top yet? No, but don't tell me these guys are not jogging around. Because, by the way, we go over during preseason and we went and beat Sporting in Portugal and you know, MLS teams put up these great games against a lot of these big European powers that come over. Now, doing it over the length of a season is a totally different deal, but I do think the MLS can be the sort of like West Ham, you know, Southampton and Swansea are kind of moving into a different stratosphere lately, which is incredible.
Are.
But I feel like they can live in that sort of, you know, 9, 10, 11 place.
The U.S. national team is one of the drivers of both MLS interest and just general soccer interest in this country. We see it during the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, even these friendlies. You know, Brazil comes to Gillette, and you're going to get a huge crowd there.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klinsmann came in, and he made a lot of statements about what he wanted to do and what he wanted the team to look like and what he wanted the results and the style and everything else to be. There's been a lot of talk recently, especially after the Gold Cup, of him not meeting those expectations. when you looked at the Jurgen Klinsmann era of U.S. soccer, what do you see?
He definitely hasn't met those expectations yet. What he did is came in, and some may call the early statements hyperbolic or overly ambitious, but I think that's what he needed to do. He mm-hmm. needed to come in and say the goal is to not get out of the groups at World Cups and win a Gold Cup and do what we've done in the past. The goal is to go to World Cups and go toe-to-toe with some of the big teams in the world. You could say these European friendlies are examples of him coming good on that promise, but I look at performances and tournaments as the ultimate metrics to see if we're on track, and it's impossible to say that we are based on getting out of quote-unquote the group of death, which I'll sit here all day long and argue it wasn't, but you know, that's hearsay.
You still got out.
Yeah,
you still got out.
Very difficult group. But the high watermark is still Bruce Arena's 2002. Because, by the way, Group of Death, that was an actual Portugal. And that was golden generation Portugal. Rui Costa, Luis Figo, mm-hmm. even at that point in their careers. That was South Korea, a host, who what? They got third in that tournament?
Yeah, who went on a
and
miracle
then,
run.
What was the third? Maybe Poland? Or
Poland. Yep.
Yeah, so that was a tough group to get out of. And by the way, they're a handball away from, and German national team players admitting they were lucky to getting into a semifinal, doing what Jurgen's promising he'll do. Go toe-to-toe. Go back and watch those games. That game against Germany, Landon's nutmeg at the top of the box, left-footed curler that Kahn makes an incredible save. They went toe-to-toe with an incredible German team. And That's obviously what we aspire to, is get to later stages in tournaments playing that way. And you can say that he doesn't have the players or come up with all these excuses, but let's not talk about playing Germany, Spain, and Brazil and getting to semifinals. Let's talk about playing in the Gold Cup against teams that we've always dominated,
yep.
that we've always been better than. That's the most troubling aspect, is that in an area that has been a constant, we're seeing a dip in results and performance. And that, to me, is more concerning than he hasn't delivered on the promise that he can go toe-to-toe with Argentina at a World Cup.
Is that roster quality? Is that tactics? Is that mentality?
I think Jurgen's approach, and we saw it with Germany, the German players were obviously more capable of not being shocked and taking on a very disciplined and high expectation and overly controlled environment that inevitably, when Jurgen Love took over, was the foundation of success for that team. You have to give Jurgen Klinsmann a lot of credit. But what he's tried to do, bringing that same philosophy of guys not knowing what position they're going to play in a game the next day, and playing in a position in that game that they didn't train in all week, and double sessions, everyone asking why are guys getting hamstring injuries. Well, isn't it pretty clear why guys mm-hmm. were getting hamstring injuries? There were a lot of incredible demands Jurgen was putting on a group of players not really accustomed to, whether it be from their club experiences or culturally as American personality being a lot different than the German personality. I think he's struggled with the reality that the bar he set for a world-class team used to that sort of approach, I think he's finding it's not nearly as easy as he had hoped.
Very few players are going to be able to just immediately jump up and grab the bar, so to speak.
Yeah, and also so many players. So it's like the fact that he doesn't really know what his back four is and isn't just saying, these are my guys, we're just going to do reps after reps after reps, games after games, to get these guys on the same page. That concerns me a little bit, that the it's hard to establish continuity in a group that has a weird dynamic of German Americans, Americans and different languages in the locker room and stuff, and I'm not for a second going to say that these players don't have the right to play for our country. Of course they do. Mm-hmm. But it is a challenging dynamic to now try to get a team on the same page when there's different languages in the locker room, different cultural backgrounds, different expectations, and to have that group, that core group, change so much is just very difficult to pull off continuity and identity, to create a identity for a group that we can all say, I mean, could people really say right now, I know who the U.S. are, how they play? You guys, we all watch every game, yeah, and consider ourselves quote-unquote experts, and when we struggle to really define,
it's very game to game,
who the U.S. is.
I've given up guessing, because I will always guess wrong. There was a lot of second guessing about DeAndre Yedlin's move to Tottenham, and now I think a lot of people are doing that again because he's now gone on loan to Sunderland.
Yeah.
And some people are saying that EPL is not the place he should go because he needs playing time, and they're not sure he could get it there. And of course, Jozy Altidore's nightmare experience there has soured people a little bit on the club. What do you make of that move? Is that the right move for him in this point in his career? Tottenham's over. It's been done.
Yeah. No. No, it's not. That is a talk about toxic locker rooms. That is a very toxic place to be. And you know, I have a lot of sympathy for Jozy and his time there. You know, some of it is, you know, I'm sure he would take responsibility for some of it not going well, and a large part of it is how hard it is to succeed in that environment right now. You're seeing a coach come in halfway through towards the end of every season in a relegation battle, save them, get fired at the beginning of next year. Not conducive to developmental players whatsoever, in my opinion. But then Jurgen talks about get to the best challenge, right? Get to the best league that you can. And I don't agree with that. The Premier League arguably is the best league in the world. Now, you can argue tactically other leagues are better or whatnot, but one of the most challenging leagues and one of the best leagues for players to aspire to get to. And if being in that league was all we needed, if we had a all of our national team players in the Premier League thinking that would win us a World Cup, why isn't England winning
the World Cup? Yeah, that's the first thing, yeah.
We're doing better in World Cups than England, and almost every single player on the roster plays in the Premier League. You want to know why that's the issue? They don't play regularly, some of them, and these are their stars. These are their players that start on their national team. So you look at the Premier League for two Americans. Brian McBride, going to Fulham was an excellent move. He was a player who was suited to that league, could hit the ground running, and did, and it helped him out with the national team. It helped out our country. Great, great move, great win. Eddie Johnson goes to Fulham, nightmare, doesn't work, almost quits the game, comes back, and it was getting into the Seattle team that got him back onto the national team. So, yes, is it ideal to be in the best league you can that challenge you the most? Yes, but not at the risk of sitting on the bench and watching the game that you need to be in.
Yeah, maybe the edit I've always thought when I heard him say that is getting the best place for you as an individual, and that's what will then benefit the national team. It's not just about saying you're in that top league in the world. It's, you know, you look at Alejandro Bedoya, for example. He's bounced around. He jumped up the ladder, but I'm sure he learned at every level. Now he's in France. He's a key contributor for the U.S., he's probably in the conversation for best American at all right now. Mm-hmm. Landon owned that for so long.
Yeah.
We'll end here. Who do you think is the best American playing the game right now?
Michael Bradley. Yeah. I think he's excellent. I think he I played against him when he was I mean, he must have been like 16 at the time. And I have to put my hand up and say I was one of the guys that was like, is this nepotism? What's going on? Like this kid's out here, and you know, there were little flashes of something there, but I thought to myself, this is kind of crazy, and I couldn't have been more wrong. He has matured, and his game is so sophisticated, it is so cerebral, it is in the genre. I put Claudio Reyna in there, I put Landon Donovan in there, maybe to a certain extent John O'Brien. There is only a small amount of players that I think see the game the way they do and are capable of executing the game, because it's not about skill. We all can show you the most skillful guys you've ever seen that can do things with the ball you can't imagine.
Guy doing tricks down in the square somewhere.
It's decision making. That is the ultimate differentiator between good and great players. Landon Donovan, Michael Bradley, Claudio Reyna, all incredible decision makers and very pressured, high stakes situations. And the more American players we have that have that quality, that's when we you know, go into the last four of a World Cup. That's when we make it into the latter stages of major tournaments consistently. But then how do you do that? That becomes, there's a myriad. I mean, to get lost in the minutiae of how to pull that off, is it difficult? I'm not going to pretend like I have the silver bullet.
We could have spent 2 hours here talking about that instead. I don't know, 20 minutes or so. Kyle Martino, at Kyle Martino on Twitter. You can watch a show on the Travel Channel. 36 hours bouncing around the world, man. Congratulations on that, as well as Saturday and Sunday mornings, EPL, NBC Sports.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for joining us, Kyle.
Yeah, I love coming in. Thanks.
Hey guys, this is Matt Miazga, defender for New York Red Bulls. You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now at Extra Time Radio. Big thanks to Kyle Martino for joining us in studio. I'm Andrew Reed, with me David Goss. We're into the mailbag. Just a little bit of time here, but we do have some gold. So we'll make sure that on Tuesday, because we won't be here on Monday, Labor Day, we'll have a great mailbag for you. One email we're not going to read comes from Pete in New Jersey. I don't know, some whack job. He sent us an email with had the word baby like 15 times. And he said,
sounds
Dax
like the
McCarty
type of guy who sleeps
stir.
With a hammer under his bed.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. It's very strange. Let's real emails, bring them on.
Well, we asked for a couple of emails in terms of obscure sightings of MLS players around
right.
the world.
We had that almost Joel Lempere sighting that wasn't.
Yeah, you're so right. I'm not going to lie, I'm a little let down. We got some good stuff. We didn't get some great stuff. Brett in Vancouver says he was actually disappointed that the other fan didn't see Joel Lempere in the end, which we were as well. He says he's gone to Brazil a couple times to watch games. But in Colombia at Atletico Nacional in Medellin, he saw...
That's very Simon of me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was. He saw Juan Pablo Angel in his last... little go-around he left
legend.
The Red Bulls.
Legend.
So JPA is a good one. He's tried to see Carlos Valdez, but the dates didn't line up. And this is the best one that we got. This one's pretty good. Ante Impio in Finland. Last Sunday, he went to see Ilves from Tampere play HJK Helsinki in Tampere, I think is the way you pronounce that city. Ilves debuted Mamadou Diouf, who is a UConn grad, similar to our own Matt Doyle. A soccer player who bounced around a little bit in MLS. And HJK had Mac Kanji on their roster, but he did not dress for the match.
Legend.
That's a really good one.
Mac Kanji has a game-winning MLS Cup goal, does he not?
No. Game-winning. Forced own goal. I don't know if you get an assist.
Oh, yeah, and he broke his leg on that one, too.
Tore his ACL, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, well, some of the details I have right.
A little foggy, but you got...
Yeah, I was in Toronto in the winter. Who knows?
You've got the rest of it right. So that was a great email, and we'll try and get you something. Here's a question coming up on a lot
can
of
we
it.
Send it to Finland.
I don't know. So we're going to figure out what we can do. Maybe we'll leave him a nice voicemail
MLS
or something.
Live or something like that. Yeah. A nice voicemail. Like he wants that.
International refusals. So Rudy in Orlando.
So it's like call-ups, but you're not going.
Well, Rudy in Orlando says, now I'm all for playing for your country, but it's the biggest honor in soccer. But when you're on the wrong side of 30 with no chance for a World Cup appearance and on a club that is bottom half of the table struggling to hold a playoff spot, I think you stay with your club. Kaká, Orlando needs you more than Brazil. Now, I actually, not on Kaká, but thinking more when Pirlo decided that he was going to go to Italy, my thought was I thought he was finished with Italy. So what do you think about the idea of an older player maybe refusing to go?
I have no problem with Kaká accepting the call. Look, he's not the one that makes the schedule. These guys getting put in a tough position where they have to choose between club and country in these situations. And for a guy like Kaká, who's a legend, ultimately playing for your country is the biggest honor that you can have in soccer, I think. So I don't begrudge him at all. It is a tough time for Orlando. But, hey, somebody's got to step up.
And last but not least, Brian Abernathy in Charlotte, North Carolina. He just enrolled in an evening MBA program at Wake Forest in Charlotte.
Which means he's double dosing here.
He says, no more going out for the night with friends. No more weekend trips to the beach. Just studying and writing papers. The worst part,
an ETR?
He can hardly find time to watch MLS. He gets to listen to us in the car while he commutes, which is perfect. Okay. He said, in an effort to promote more better study habits, he's moved his desk away from the TV. But on Sundays, he feels that need for his MLS fix. He's a huge fan of the league in general. He doesn't necessarily have a favorite team. His heart belongs to the Charlotte Independents of USL, who have a lot of games in hand as they make up at the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoff race. But he's asking for swag. We're not normally swayed by people who just ask, but if he puts it on his desk, he thinks maybe he won't have to watch, and that'll fill. And because I got to get my little USL playoff thing in through his Charlotte Independents, Queen City.
So you feel good now?
So we're going to give Brian Abernathy something, so we're going to decide on it.
Probably
an MLS All-Star Game mini ball or something like that that he could put on his desk.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe hit you with some of these Oyo guys just to give you a little bit of flavor. Maybe a couple of them since you don't have any favorite team. Hey, thanks for you, Dave. Thanks to all our guests on this show. We had a packed show. Matt Doyle, Quincy Ameriqua, Kyle Martino. I'm Andrew Wiebe. You know him. He's Dave Goss. We'll see you around on Tuesday.